Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. Therefore you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These are the words we hear from Moses in the book of Deuteronomy today. And Jesus points out that pretty much most of the Bible can be boiled down to this idea: to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. But to talk about that, I want a quick recap where we're at in the unfolding of salvation history with Moses in Deuteronomy. So over the last few weeks, we've talked about the creation, that God is the Lord of all, the creator of all. We talked about the fall, or the original sin of Adam and Eve, of them trying to seek that happiness and fulfillment, to grasp for it without God, over and apart from God. Then Deacon Rob talked about Noah and the flood, the cleansing of the world, if you will, the baptism of the world and the recreation of the world. And then we didn't talk about, but then from them until Moses, we have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Jacob, also known as Israel. And that God made a covenant with Abraham that said, through you, I will raise up a nation that will be the light to the nations. That through you, I will bring about blessing to the whole world, which we see ultimately fulfilled in Christ. But from there, then the Israelites went over to Egypt because of a famine, got enslaved. Then we have the famous story of Moses and the Exodus, freeing them, well, God freeing them with and through Moses. And then they cross the Red Sea, and then they end up at Mount Sinai, also known as Mount Horeb. That's where we find ourselves, at Mount Sinai, or Mount Horeb. That's when then Moses gets the Ten Commandments. And then, shortly after they forge this covenant, Moses gets the Ten Commandments. Then what happens? They worship the golden calf. Holy cow. They had just forged a covenant with God, and then they turn away from it. They break the very first commandment: that the Lord is God, the Lord alone. So what happens then is then they have to reforge the covenant and create a new covenant because they broke it already. But this covenant comes with a lot more rules, a lot more laws, and a lot stricter ones. And that's laid out in the entire book of Leviticus then. It gets its own entire book of laws. Because it's much like if you have, say, a rebellious child or a rebellious teenager who keeps breaking the rules, then you have to crack down and lay down the law, if you will. And that you have to give them a lot more rules and a lot more very specific rules of what they can and can't do, because until they learn to be responsible. And so it's similar with the people of Israel, the Israelites, that after they broke the covenant, God had to give them a whole lot more laws. And then they had to live under that law until the coming of Christ, who then fulfills that law and frees us from the power of that law unto the power of the new law in Christ. And then after that, of course, the Israelites wander through the desert for 40 years, and then we find ourselves in the book of Deuteronomy. The book of Deuteronomy is the final sermon of Moses. 34 chapters long homily. You're lucky I don't give you that. So that we hear his final words, the last words he says before his last sermon he preaches to them before he dies and before they enter into the promised land. And at the heart of it, the core of this, is what we hear today. These words: hear, O Israel, the Lord is your God, the Lord alone. But he doesn't just speak these words, of course, to the people of Israel thousands of years ago. But those words are meant for us here and now. Because the name, by the way, Israel, literally means one who wrestles with God, one who struggles with God, which perhaps many of us can relate to that in some way. So we could hear it: hear, O you who wrestle with God, O you who struggle with God, hear this, that the Lord your God is God alone. The question arises: is he? Is the Lord the God, the Lord of my life? Is he the one who is Lord of my life, or is something else Lord of my life, or someone else Lord of my life? All throughout the Bible, we see the people Israel struggling with idolatry, the worshiping of false gods over and over again. They keep falling back into it. And I tell you, I think idolatry is alive and well today. Not that people are running around now bowing down to golden cattle, at least not that I'm aware of. If you know of anyone, you should probably send them to me. Not that people are building statues and worshiping them, but idolatry in the sense of having other false gods, other things being the lord of our lives, the dominating force, the directing force of our lives. I think I've talked about before that each and every human being, we have this God-shaped, God-sized hole in our soul, this void in us that only God can fill and only God was meant to fill. But that oftentimes we try and fill that void with anything other than God, anything but God. And you name it, we try and fill the void in us with whatever. Whether it's power and influence over others, whether it's money, whether it's work, whether it's entertainment, popularity, relationships, drugs, alcohol, parties. And all these things, well, not all of them, but many of these things are not inherently bad in and of themselves. But when we try to use them to fill a space that only God can fill, that's when they become false gods. And they become idols, that they have a power over our life. And that we're called to break free from that. That to make God the only God of our life. Many times we at least want to, we understand God's important and we want to bring him along for the ride. I think by virtue of us being here, we know that God's important. Many times we want to bring him along for the ride, but sometimes that's all. We want to bring him along for the ride, but keep him in the side seat. I recently saw a sign that said, if God is your co-pilot, you better change seats. God is your co-pilot, you better change seats. Because you're not the one who's supposed to be flying the plane. That God's supposed to be flying the plane. And make him the one directing the driving force of our life. So the Lord is our God, the Lord alone, and to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, we hear. So the question, do I love God? And is the love of God, or me striving to love God, the driving force of my life? Moses goes on to say, we don't hear it in our clip of reading we have, but if you keep reading in Deuteronomy, he goes on to say these words, to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, to drill them into your children. He says, speak of them all the time, whether you're traveling or at home, whether you're out working or you're resting. And he said, strap them on, those words, onto your very arm. Put it as, strap it on your forehead so you don't forget it. Put it on, write it on your doorpost so you see it every time you go in and out of your home. That this will become the driving force and you're constantly reminded to love God with your whole being, with every aspect of who you are, and to use everything in our life and every sphere of who we are to love God. That is supposed to be the driving force of our life, to try and love God with everything that we are. Because when we do that, then everything else falls into place. As a friend of mine is fond of saying, all you need to do is fall deeper in love with love himself, and everything else will fall in place. So to seek to love God with your whole being. And if you're not sure how to do that, what does it mean to love God? How do I love God? If you're not sure how to do it, well, first of all, that's why you have a priest. That's why you have fellow disciples who are working through this with you. That's why we have many great resources available to us. That's why we have the saints, examples of many examples and ways and people journeying with us and trying to figure out what does it mean and what does it look like to love God. But I would also add three things to help us to grow in love of God and for that love to be the driving force of our life. First of all, the Eucharist, what we celebrate tonight, to gather here and worship and to receive his divine life that he wants to give us. Also daily prayer, that daily dialogue with God. As I've talked about, the 1% challenge, to give 1% of your day each day in prayer and prayerful dialogue with God. 1% of your day, which is approximately 14 minutes and 24 seconds. And then thirdly, to live the life that God intends for us. To live a life of love, as God would, of outpouring ourselves out of love and service for others. So the Eucharist, the prayer, to love. You can summarize this in three words: eat, pray, love. Eat the Eucharist, pray, and love. I'm thinking about writing a book with that title, Eat, Pray, Love. Maybe I'll make a movie and cast Julia Roberts in it too. I don't know. So eat, pray, love. And to allow these things, so that the love of God will be the driving force and the dominating force of everything we do. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. Therefore you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, with all your strength.